My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. My fellow plebs, today's podcast is also brought to you by Moon Mortgage. As the world moves increasingly towards the mainstream adoption of Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage makes it possible to materialize your assets into real estate. Through the collateralization of mortgages with Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage will be launching lending solutions to allow investors to easily leverage their assets to purchase investments in owner-occupied property. Moon Mortgage's crypto mortgage will be launching soon for home buyers in Texas, Florida, and Colorado, and will also be open to investors in most states across the U.S. for investment properties. Welcome to the future of mortgages. Visit moonmortgage.com today to register and learn more. Moon Mortgage Residential is registered with the NMLS under number 235334.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today. I've really been looking forward to this one. We're kind of doing a bit of an early morning Cosmic Bitcoin sesh. I know you're over in Europe, so accommodating the time difference there. So it's kind of a nice way to kick off the day today. But I'll just say I'm a really big fan of your work, and I love the way that you describe Bitcoin and both kind of a philosophical and I'd say like almost a poetic lens a lot of times. I just find your work so evocative and yeah, really inspiring too and quite positive. So I'm looking forward to unpacking a lot of that today. But yeah, first of all, I just kind of wanted to understand, like, oftentimes when people come across Bitcoin for the first time, you know, they see it as kind of a curiosity, perhaps not, you know, understanding the full implications of what this digital money might represent as both a store of value, but also its ability to scale around the world. And so first of all, I would just be curious, like, when you first saw Bitcoin, did you recognize it as money? And I guess that kind of also relates to, did you understand the significance of money? Like, I know CK, my co-host, who's not with us today, he often talks about how Bitcoin causes people to become more financially literate. Like, fiat, under fiat, everyone has to be, I guess, financially illiterate for the system to continue functioning, I would argue. So yeah, I guess quite a few questions there. But overall, like, what was your first impression of this technology?
Well, first of all, thank you for all the compliments. It warms my heart a lot to hear that, of course. Yeah, I love what I do and I keep on doing it.
It shows. I think your passion really comes through.
Thank you. Well, I first discovered Bitcoin somewhere like 14, 15, maybe even earlier. I didn't really deep dive into it until 2016 when I took a course and started to try to understand it properly. But the question, when did I realize it was money? I'd like to flip that instantly here and say that it's not money. it's just an agreement between people on a fixed set of rules with which we can interact with one another. In a way, it's money if money was perfect. In the collective understanding of the word money, we never had anything that was absolutely finite and also at the same time infinitely divisible, or for any practical purposes infinitely divisible. So we never seen anything like this before, and the notion of Bitcoin being money might have been a bad thing from Satoshi and company to market it as money in the first place. If they would have just instead marketed it as a funny set of mathematics with which we can interact with one another, then maybe all of these misconceptions about that legislators and so on have about it could have been avoided if we had never used the word money in the first place. Because I think Bitcoin transcends money and even assets or everything. It's just a way to use information to, you know, make come to life a rule set that is not changing unless everyone agrees that a change is in order. In other words, it can only ever get better and never get worse, because everyone needs to agree that the change is for the better. And we never had anything like it before. So I keep on trying to figure out what it is and what it will do to humanity. And the deeper I dig, the more insanely bullish and optimistic I become.
No, likewise, absolutely. And I think it's such a foreign thing, like trying to understand. I mean, first of all, like predicting the future is an impossibility, but secondly, like this is such a new capacity for humanity. We've never had this ability before. And I think one way that you describe it is, you know, let me just pull up the quote. In Independence Reimagined, you just write, absolute mathematical scarcity achieved by consensus in a sufficiently decentralized distributed network was a discovery rather than an invention. It cannot be achieved again by a network made up of participants aware of this discovery, since the very thing discovered was resistance to replicability itself. And I think that, I mean, it's just such a mind-blowing concept to think about, like, we're instantiating resistance to replicability within information, which has never been possible before. And it's, I mean, Michael Saylor has such a profound way of describing what digital energy is, but it's this like very strange melding of the physical world into the digital. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just so mind blowing. And I think a way that Gigi describes it is we're a bunch of blind guys trying to figure out what an elephant is by using our hands and kind of feeling around in the dark. And it's just like, what is this thing that we've found and perhaps discovered, as you say, rather than invented? So I think that's a thread I'd really like to pull on, is like, what is the difference between a discovery and an invention? Like what makes Bitcoin discovered, like versus, you know, concocted?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, I'd say that, like, of course, the Bitcoin white paper was written by someone or a group of people, and that started the whole thing. And Satoshi, whoever that was, started mining, paused his mining for 2 weeks, and then continued mining when the next miner came online, in order for the immaculate conception to happen, competition to be fair, and then disappeared after a while. So I think what we call Bitcoin today is not necessarily what was intended in the first place, nor what whatever someone's opinion about what it should or should not be, but it is something that has emerged out of these concepts. And like, for me the big turning point and the thing that really cemented my ironclad belief in that this thing is actually real was the block size wars and the SegWit 2x hard fork that never happened back in 2017, which proved that the users were in control and not the people making fiat money off of the name of Bitcoin. So in the same way, I think human intelligence emerged from some simpler phenomena, or how life emerged on Earth from simpler things. Bitcoin emerged in the, what we call Bitcoin today, emerged out of this cypherpunk movement at some point. I don't think there's a clear point in time. Well, maybe when the SegWit 2x hard fork was denied, but it's sort of a fleeting thing when this thing actually became what we call Bitcoin today. And I believe there's a point in time where we'll see the last ever fork in Bitcoin, and no one knows when we've passed the last one and we can never implement a new one, because the hurdles to do so is just too big and everyone thinks Bitcoin is fine the way it is. So yeah, like life, it's very hard to define what it is, but it is something, and it is not In that sense, it's not an invention, because an invention is a very specific thing. Like the screwdriver is an invention, and it has a very specific purpose and does a very specific thing. But Bitcoin is much more than that and does different things to different people. It touches absolutely everything and everything that has to do with human interactions. And I find it insanely fascinating.
Yeah, Chris, I see you have your hand raised there, but I just wanted to riff on that real quick. I often try to think about like what the point of Bitcoin is. Like, obviously it has an objective function to adhere to its emission schedule and churn out a block every 10 minutes. And that really at a fundamental level, that's what it's trying to do. But I think there's also like this, there is like something deeper in trying in what Bitcoin represents for us. And I think at the end of the day is it's, and I've spoken with Aaron Segal about this on Cosmic Bitcoin before, but it's a medium for like uncovering new information in the world. And I think, you know, I don't know how to say this too articulately, but I think it's for helping people understand themselves and their place in the world. And then, you know, we can bring all of our perspectives together in kind of a much more like a higher fidelity manner. And so I don't know, I just try to, that's like what kind of keeps me up at night is like, what is the purpose of Bitcoin? And I mean, I think that also just makes people try to understand too, like what are the values that we hold to? Like, what ends are we trying to achieve? What do we truly value? And I think that's kind of one of the radical recapitulations that Bitcoin engenders, is like having people understand their values rather than just kind of, you know, walking through life, you know, under fiat, where I think oftentimes like a lot of those value judgments are kind of not front and center. But when you have kind of this individual sovereignty, it really brings them to the forefront. And I think that's something I want to kind of unpack with you a bit more too, is like what kind of values does Bitcoin engender in people? Like, what does it mean to be a Bitcoiner as well? So I guess I'd like to, yeah, just kind of start with that. Like, I know you've spoken often about your experience interacting with Bitcoiners, but I would just love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, to try to simplify that in an answer somehow, I'd like to point out, like currently, maybe this is because I'm currently writing a book about praxeology, but praxeology and deductive reasoning, first principles thinking, can lead you to the conclusion that on the whole, voluntary consensual interactions between human beings are way better for civilizational advancements and improvements and the betterment of mankind, if you will, than violent and coercive ones are and can ever dream to be. Like, the systems we've lived in so far are flawed, all of them, because none of them have sound money in their base layers. But it was pretty obvious in hindsight that, you know, the American Constitution was a better way of cooperating between people than the Communist Manifesto was. Like, that was a better ground to build on. And like, the way I see it, the more consensual voluntary interactions we can have in society, the better it is. And the flip side of that coin is the fewer violent and coercive ones we have, the better off we are. And that's what Bitcoin does. It points all vectors in that direction and helps people interact with one another without having to ask a third party for permission. So there's never a psychopath that can like take over and use it to his advantage. Like, the rules are set and they're the same for each and every one of us. And that's the true beauty of the thing. So, and if you add to that, that it's not very easy to take someone's Bitcoin. Right now, you can threaten anyone in the world and ask them to give you all their Bitcoins, but you can never know that they actually did that, because they can have more Bitcoins than they gave you, even if they give you a large sum of Bitcoins. Well, if they give you 21 million, you can be pretty sure that they gave you all that they had, but chances of that are pretty small. The point is that in itself reduces the incentives for violence on every layer of society. It moves the shelling point for violent behavior. So it makes it harder for rent seekers and people who live off of others, who live off the fruits of other people's labor, they will have a harder time doing so in the future and in a Bitcoinized world. And I believe we're past the point where we can, where any one of these leaders or whatever can turn this thing off, or like where we can stop this hyper Bitcoinization from happening. It is going to happen. We don't know if it takes like 4 years, 40 years, or 400 years. Nobody knows, but it will happen. It is simply the best way of interacting with other people there is, for a multitude of reasons. So I think that the main thing that makes us as a species better to one another, that we're not incentivized to be violent at all anymore in the long run. And if you add to that everything else that is beneficial, that we will lower our time preference because we have a deflationary asset instead of an inflationary one, so that we will value quality over quantity in the future. That's a massive benefit for everyone. Will make us less consumerist and more Buddhist, if you will, or stoic. I think slowly but surely, Bitcoin leads people to the insight, that the philosophical insight, that which they can do without they own. So material excess is not what it leads to. It leads to the opposite of that. It leads to ownership of your time and ownership of your life and what you want to do with it. And if you appreciate Bitcoin for what it is, you probably won't want to buy Lambos for it. It's much more likely that you'll like to live in a cottage somewhere with an internet connection and take long walks with your dogs or something. So yeah, I think it's beneficial to the human psyche on multiple levels.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I would definitely want to unpack that like psychological aspect a bit more. But I guess I'll give Chris a sec to hop in here. Chris, if you have a question for...
Yeah, no, I think a lot of great stuff, Spencer and Knut. I guess the one thing I wanted to unpack, and I really love your thoughts on, like, you know, the mind virus of Bitcoin's kind of its best attribute, and kind of like, I definitely say in this present moment, it's kind of one of the things that's most overlooked or undervalued. But you said like the mentality of Bitcoiners and people that are on a Bitcoin standard is one of the greatest things. And I know you spoke about this in other Twitter spaces, but I guess going back to kind of what you were saying before, you were kind of mentioning the upgrades or the changes to Bitcoin, and that you don't really think they will happen. Maybe I'm misrepresenting it, but I guess let me just explain. Like, I mean, obviously we saw Taproot go through in 2021, and that was kind of like a speedy trial. And then we've kind of even seen recently other people try and implement that, whether that was Jeremy Rubin with CV or even James O'Byrne with his most recent proposal for vaults, and he was trying to do it speedy trial. I guess I don't know if there will be, I can't say one way or the other if there's going to be more upgrades to Bitcoin or not, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is, well, it was very important that the users are basically in control of Bitcoin, and we kind of saw that in 2017. Do you see like speedy trial or that implementation method of upgrades as potentially a risk for Bitcoin? This is kind of something that I've been mulling over recently, because with speedy trial, it's kind of like the developers and the miners are kind of colluding to change Bitcoin. And luckily we've had two cases where it kind of seems like it's been struck down. Obviously Taproot had like many years of development, but I guess I'm just curious your thoughts on, like, you're kind of advocating that Bitcoin doesn't need any changes. Well, I do think that there may be changes that come in the future, but do you see like speedy trial as a risk to those upgrades?
Well, Bitcoin will need changes for sure. There are some bugs that need to be fixed, but I'm not very technical in that sense, but I do believe it that if Bitcoin works the way we think it will work, the changes and upgrades will be fewer and further apart until we reach a point where Bitcoin is perfect, basically. That might take 1 year or 10 years or 100 years, I don't know. But at some point, if we have enough people on the planet that run their own nodes, it's going to get harder and harder, incrementally harder and harder over time, to make people agree to that degree that they can actually change the code. And because like resistance to change is one of the most important aspects of this thing. But as I said, the upgrades that actually happen, they happen because everyone agreed that it was a good idea, and who knows their shit and are running the software and verifying everything. They decide. And if they're all in agreement, I mean, how do we define what was good and what was bad? If everyone is in agreement, that's a definition of good. So that's why I say that if you view this from another way, Bitcoin can only get better, because worse, it's not an option, if you understand what I mean.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLIVE to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com. As 2023 begins, the broke issue stares head on into the looming realities of a broken economy, a more broke central bank, and considers how Bitcoiners can share their knowledge, their projects, and their mentalities to remain strong economic nodes throughout the winter. As a global Bitcoin news medium with a mission to accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization, Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Inside Bitcoin Magazine, you will find exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, and powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Each issue will be shipped safely in a secure box mailer to protect the integrity of each copy. Print magazines, not money. Buy Bitcoin Magazine.
Awesome. Yeah, I think like at a fundamental level, it's really the incentives are, you know, they don't need to be changed for the Bitcoin network to do what it needs to do. I think there might, you know, maybe a need for incremental small changes to the code.
I'd say it's absolutely paramount that the incentive structure is not changed. Mm-hmm. The likelihood of this thing actually working and growing to what it is today are so enormously small. We're really lucky that history played out the way that it did, because had it played out some other way and had like Ethereum surpassed Bitcoin back in 2017 when everyone was talking about the fucking flippening or whatnot, then the whole experiment might have failed. And I believe we're past that point, but I'm not 100% sure. So like tampering with this thing and trying to change it, if you don't know what you're doing on a very, very deep level, you should probably not try to change it. And if you're running your own node and like if you're unsure about an upgrade, just run the software you're already running. Like don't try to change this thing and destroy it. Having said all that, all the later changes that have been done are soft forks, and they are optional, at least to a certain extent. I mean, I don't like the ordinals and that kind of behavior, but then again, I'm gonna, you know, I don't care what you pay, but I'm gonna fight to the death for your right to pay it, as Giacomo paraphrased Voltaire or Evelyn Beatrice Hall. The thing is, those noisy things might be a thing right now, but in the long run, Bitcoin is going to be way too valuable. The on-chain transactions are going to be way too valuable for people to play with it in that sense and put pictures on it and stuff. You know, all right now, if you take any point in time, if you take right now, you have a chance at getting a message into the next Bitcoin block. And that window is 10 minutes on average at each and every point in time. So if you want to put anything in the next Bitcoin block, you have 10 minutes to do so. And then after those 10 minutes have passed, that chance is lost forever. And no one can alter that. So time space, as I prefer to call it, instead of block space, I think it's a vastly underpriced asset because you only have this 10 minute window every 10 minutes to do something with it. And after that time has passed and you can no longer claim to be the guy that put this funny limerick or whatever in that block or made this funny transaction, whatever. Still, I think the ordinals and such and, you know, these experiments are proof of how early we are. We still are in Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, when I first like really got into Bitcoin, I, you know, would stay up late at night thinking, oh my gosh, like I need to get more, you know, I don't want to be late to this. And the more and more I learn, the more I realize, you know, we are so unbelievably early. It's kind of, it's really a rather small group of Bitcoiners that are, I mean, all in might be the wrong word, but psychologically all in, I guess I'll say, people that truly understand the potential and see the game theory playing out in a certain way. So, I mean, I think,
let me just interrupt you there for a second and say, I still think no one does. I think no one knows what this thing is. So saying that you know what it is, it's the arrogance that comes with being a human. We say that we can fix climate change or we say that we can colonize other planets and stuff. We just don't know. Like admitting that you don't know is in my book a virtuous thing. And we don't know what Bitcoin is. We don't know what Bitcoin will be. We know that it can be extremely beneficial to us if it stays the way it is. And that's enough. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting.
I know. You're all good. And I think that really sparks something in me is like, that ability to deal with uncertainty and to recognize the limits of our knowledge is so important. And I think we see kind of that arrogance or that like kind of fallacious kind of perspective in fiat. Like we have this centrally planned money where the government thinks that they can, you know, calculate, you know, what everyone's time preference should be for whatever reason. Yet I think it's very clear that that's kind of an intractable task. And I think it's like, for us to recognize, you know, the self-determination of others and to recognize that we don't know, you know, what others are thinking or what they value and only they do. I think that's like one of the most powerful aspects of Bitcoin is like recognizing kind of the individuality and agency of other people. And I think this definitely relates to something you wrote in Bitcoin Magazine with regards to like Bitcoin scaling solution. And at the end of the day, I think it's like, how do I put this? I think it really does help people interact harmoniously to let them, you know, self-determine is kind of a way of putting it. And I guess I'll just say we had Nozomi Hayase on Cosmic Bitcoin recently, and she talked about, you know, Bitcoin is love. And I think it's just such a powerful idea and really encapsulates what we're trying to do with, you know, individual exchange. And yeah, I would just love to get your thoughts on, like, you know, the role of, I guess, having boundaries between people, the role of allowing exchange between people rather than kind of coercion. You know, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I can do a little TLDR about that article if you want. Like, yeah. First of all, like Bitcoin is deflationary so that it alters our time preference. So we adopt a lower and lower time preference the more we appreciate Bitcoin, meaning that we choose to save rather than spend. We choose delayed gratification rather than, you know, instant dopamine hits all the time. That's the general trend. So it will make everyone, you know, prioritize quality over quantity in the long run. And also, like, what we're doing now is one of Bitcoin's use cases. There are no sats being exchanged between us. But you believe, and I believe, that we have something to gain from this conversation. So I'd say this conversation is a trade between us and everyone in this room. Everyone in this room who voluntarily gave up their time to listen to this bullshit did so because they believed there was something of value there. And it's related to Bitcoin. So I'd say this is an aspect of Bitcoin too. The idea of Bitcoin and the word Bitcoin, whenever anyone hears it, it gets hammered into their brains more and more. And at the end of the day, that will lead into number go up at some point. Furthermore, if you have if you've been in the Bitcoin space for a while, and if you've interacted with Bitcoiners, you probably noticed something that I noticed, and that is how friendly everyone is. And how eager everyone is to pick up the restaurant bill or, you know, just be a very nice guy. That has many, many reasons. But mostly, I think it is we feel that we can trust people who've been in Bitcoin long because they're simply trustworthy. So we treat them more like we treat our family. If you think about how you interact with your family or your closest friends, you very rarely use money in the sense that you exchange small sums of money with one another. So all these things taken together, I think the necessity for money in the really long-term perspective goes down rather than up. So we won't have to, like, that's why, while I think microtransactions is cool and that we have the ability to do them, that's absolutely awesome. I think people won't do as many microtransactions in the future as they do now. Microtransactions themselves are a very fiat-y thing. Bitcoin is about lowering your time preference and having trusting one another more. And like when your Bitcoin stack, when you realize that that's the most valuable thing you have, you'll trade away absolutely everything else you have before you trade away your Bitcoin at some point, depending on how deep your understanding is. And that includes your reputational capital and so on and so forth. So that's why I think the necessity for actual transactions to happen goes down rather than in the long run. So that's the TLDR on that. But what I mean by that is that Bitcoin is love. The thing it does, it returns us to a state of just cooperating with one another for the sake of cooperating and for the sake of loving thy neighbor or whatever the correct expression is. Like, we realize that collaborating is better than fighting everywhere, always. So that's where we're going. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, no, super, super well said. I think it makes sense just that, like, the incentive would be, you know, to, you know, obviously save as much Bitcoin as you can. And one way you can do that is by reducing the number of transactions you send. And you can do that ultimately by fostering trust in between individuals in your life. And I think that's such a cool aspect of it. I mean, I suppose that could apply to...
Well, it's more like when you say reducing the number of transactions, I'd say, you know, buying less crap. that's the key. Like, don't buy a ton of crap.
Yeah, no, totally. And I mean, yeah, like you said, it's such a more cooperative and harmonious system, allowing people to do as they see fit. And I think, you know, we're all going to be better for that as well. And I think I've also listened to you speak a bit about kind of the pitfalls of democracy as it relates to cooperation. And I know you've talked about Hans Hermann Hoppe's book, Democracy, the God That Failed. And I found that, like, for me, when I was trying to wrap my head around Bitcoin and also just governance generally, I found that to be such an interesting rabbit hole in itself, especially within the libertarian community, like trying to understand the pitfalls of democratic governance, systemic capture, and things like that. So yeah, I'd be curious, like, do you have any specific thoughts on democracy as a whole? I know you've spoken with Saifedean about this a little bit, but would love to hear some of your thoughts there.
Yeah, my ideas about it are very similar to Saifedean's, I think. And Hans Hermann Hoppe is an interesting character. I think he's one of the brightest people alive. He's been called racist and whatever, and he's been expelled from his university for various reasons. But still, I can recommend all of his books. Democracy, the God That Failed is not the best book he wrote, but it's still a fantastic book. The best Hoppe book in my mind is, in my opinion, is one called Economic Science and the Austrian Method. It's not a very sexy title, but still, that's very good. Yeah, No one ever questions democracy, or very seldom, because we're all spoon-fed the idea that this is the ultimate way to govern society from a very young age. And we're kidnapped from our parents for 8 hours a day for 12 years at least, and being spoon-fed this narrative and having it hammered into us almost every day during those 12 years. So it's very hard to find what's, it's just like money. It's very hard to find what's wrong with a systemic issue from within a system. We all live in democracies. I bet you that everyone in this space is living in a democracy or some form of it. And we all have our ideas about what a democracy should be and what it shouldn't be. And we're all disappointed in whatever democracy we're living in because it's not delivering the goods. And the basic thing we forget to ask ourselves is, what is the ethical foundations behind this way of governing people? Like, why does a popularity contest every 4 years make theft less immoral? And that question is very hard to answer from a first principles perspective, because it simply doesn't. It doesn't matter if you have a popularity contest. Taking people's stuff and being violent to people is still wrong always. And we would be better off if we didn't do it. But people believe that taxes are good and that we need them in order for society to work. What they don't see is what kind of society we would have without them. And if you count all the taxes, including the inflation, the tax rate is over 50% in every country in the world, because all of our economies are intertwined and connected. So every time you buy something from another country, all the taxes that were that all the workers and all the companies and everyone in that supply chain had to pay were there too. So you're also paying for those taxes. You're paying an enormous part of everything you buy goes to taxes somewhere. If you follow the money, truly follow the money all the way, at least 50% is taken away. I would say it's closer to fucking 80% if you count everything. And the thing about taxes is, like, if you have an entrepreneur that grows an apple tree and sells the apples and makes a profit so that he can buy another apple tree and sell the double amount of apples next year, he can buy, after the second year, he can buy two new apple trees and expand his business. So the third year he has a fourth apple tree, the fifth year he has eight apple trees, and then 16, and then 32, and so on and so forth. Companies can expand exponentially if they're allowed to. But when you have a tax man taking 50% of the revenue, that apple farmer never gets to the second tree. So that's the part that we don't see. We don't know what the world would have been like if we had allowed entrepreneurs to expand and satisfy more customers' needs everywhere. Because taxes fuck with that with the free market system, which is still the best system we have for absolutely everything. And anyone who says anything else hasn't done the deep dive yet. So the democracy is a process that feeds itself all the time. And you very seldom hear politicians promising the people less benefits and not to expand and if we get into power, we're all going to resign and remove all the laws and bureaucracy. No one ever says that, because people want to believe that there's a free lunch. So they will vote for people who tell them that there's a free lunch. But there is no free lunch, and there cannot be. All that happens is that when you vote for a person that says there's a free lunch, which every party does in every country, is that you give them more power and them more free lunches. They're the ones getting the free lunch. So, and I see so many sad things about democracies. Like, when you have a social security policy, for instance, you take from the rich and you give to the poor by force, so by taxes. The thing you're doing is that you're incentivizing people to be poor and disincentivizing people to be productive. So the outcome will be fewer productive people and more unproductive people. because it's now profitable to be unproductive. If you can get a fixed amount of, especially when Bitcoin exists, if you can get a free amount of fiat every month from the government, you can just pour half of it into Bitcoin and then, you know, do whatever with the other half and start your own little Bitcoin business on the side while the government is giving you someone else's money. I mean, there's so much wrong with it. But we're told all the time, because these things grow like cancers, like we give the power to the biggest party, but the biggest party consists of the votes, like of people who said the most populistic things and promised the most free lunches. And their voters are comprised of people who cared more about belonging to a group than what that group actually thought. Individualists don't vote for big parties generally. Collectivists do, and tribalists do. So you get, collectivists will always win elections. Elections are in themselves a very left-wingy thing because they favor groupthink over individualism. And all of this is bad for everyone, but we're told it isn't, because the people who benefit from it or think that they benefit from it by rent seeking and taking other people's money, they're the ones who get to call the shots and get to, you know, control the narrative and tell us that this is the case. So yeah, I believe democracy is one way of governing societies, but I don't think it's an ultimate way of governing societies by any stretch of the imagination. And I think with Bitcoin, we have a shot at changing this, because now we can interact with one another without rulers. So we don't have any self-proclaimed leaders that kidnap us from birth and tell us what to do. That is all going away on a Bitcoin standard. At least that's what I hope. And all the vectors are pointing in that direction if you look closely. We have this chance now. And I also believe, I try to be an optimist, I believe that social media and video conferencing has made the planet a very much, very much smaller place. So when you can collaborate with people by the click of a button anywhere in the world, you realize how ridiculous borders are. And you realize how ridiculous it is that that guy over there on the other end of my screen is operating in a society that has a different rule set than the one I'm in has. It's just absurd that we should, you know, have different rules apply to us. We're both people. Like, it all becomes ridiculous. So if you don't want this dystopian constant boot to the face type of future, Orwellian thing, if you don't want Nazis on the street, don't be a nationalist and don't be a socialist. Like, be yourself and take responsibility for your actions and try to opt out of all of these corrupt systems as much as you can. Yeah.
No, it's
end of rant.
No, that was awesome. And I think one thing you said there that's super important is, like, kind of the difference between, like, what we see today and what could have been. I think that, you know, there's this argument made by people who are, you know, pro-state, and they say, oh, you know, we need the state to build the roads and to, quote unquote, provide services. But they don't see the world that could have been if there wasn't this redistribution and destruction of wealth. You know, when you have taxation stealing people's money and then allocating it to, you know, mid-level bureaucrats who, you know, I mean, I myself got a liberal arts degree, but, you know, who have a liberal arts degree and are trying to, like, run a complex system that's, like, you know, far beyond their capacity to be able to centrally plan it. Like, it really is an impossibility if we're, like, thinking at the largest scale. And yeah, I think it's, like, it really makes me think, like, what will a future on a Bitcoin standard look like? And something, you know, obviously you've popularized, you know, Bitcoin is everything divided by 21 million. And I mean, I think that's incredibly profound. And, you know, everyone often talks about Bitcoin as well as number go up technology. But I've also heard you say, you know, Bitcoin is number go down technology. And I think that's a really great inversion. I mean, really, I think it really shows the benefit of, you know, a non-inflationary economic system. Like, what that does to our ability to economize. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to hear your thoughts on like what a Bitcoinized world will look like. Like, what does it really mean for everything to go down forever?
It means a lot of things, like, and I think it's impossible for any single human to understand what that is, because it's so vastly different from what we're living in now. I would say it's not, mathematically speaking, it's not minus what we're living in now. It's one divided by what we're living in now. So it's the literal inverse of whatever this is. And yeah, like I said before, I think the necessity for money goes down. So I think people will be more careful with what they buy. Not because they have too little money, but because they know how powerful it is to not spend it instead of spending it. And we will look back at this at the 20th century and say like, oh, that's when those idiots, historical idiots, thought that inflation was needed for society to function.
It's when everyone thought that you could just cut a pizza into a bunch of smaller pieces and you would get more pizza. Like, what a ridiculous concept.
Yeah. Yes, and I believe that that's the greatest lie ever told. I mean, there are many other great lies, like nation states and religions and whatnot, but inflation is a great lie, because it's the literal opposite of the truth. And you can see, if you look at electronics, I mean, you have deflation in all technologies, and this system we're living in now needs inflation to match that. But the deflation in technology is exponential. This is what Jeff Booth talks about all the time. And in electronics, the price inflation has not been able to keep up with the deflationary nature of electronics and how much cheaper they are produce year to year. So the price of a megabyte today, as compared to 1985, is just insanely cheap. And has that industry suffered from having deflationary prices? No way. On the contrary, that they've been the single most successful industry on earth. Computers and electronics, and computer hardware. There's no industry like it, and they've experienced deflationary prices since they were invented. So the notion that inflation is necessary, it's just false. It's not only false; it's the opposite of what the actual truth is. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it definitely feels like a silly time we're living in. And it also, I think it also speaks to kind of the self-defeating nature of an inflationary and redistributive economic system. Is like, we're constantly creating rent-seeking opportunities for people, which is creating an upward redistribution in wealth, which then requires more taxation, quote unquote, to, you know, allow people to survive at the bottom. And I feel like it ultimately just ends up destroying more and more capital along the way. It's like this self-defeating feedback loop. And it's, I mean, it's quite sad, but also I think that's the reason for me and so many others, like Bitcoin represents hope to kind of transcend that like race to the bottom of this, like, I guess, type of socialism at the end of the day. Yeah. So, I mean, listening to you speak, I think I get so bullish on Bitcoin. I think it's just so evocative. Everything divided by 21 million is like, I think it really speaks to how long-term we can truly think, like having to come to terms with the fact that like our actions will reverberate throughout history forever. And then I think that also makes clear the importance of the present moment too. And I think, you know, in terms of human psychology, I think that's so important. If you see, you know, a possible future ahead of you, you can act, I don't know, I think just so much more holistically and better to yourself and other people. So I think that's really what gets me excited about all of this. And I guess on that note, like, I'm curious what drives you to share your thoughts with people, to act in the way you do. I mean, obviously you could just sit on the side and stack Bitcoin and keep to yourself and, you know, keep a low profile. But I mean, it seems you've been incredibly motivated to put yourself out there. So I'd be curious, like, how do you think about that in your life?
Yeah, well, I started writing just for my own amusement, but then my writings got appreciated and more appreciated. And I, like every other human being, I like appreciation. And I like, you know, having all this love around me. I'm not ashamed of that. On the contrary, that sort of fuels my fire and wants me to do these things more and to talk with people. And now I have this Freedom Footprint show. I don't know if you've heard it. I have a Bitcoin pod or a Bitcoin philosophy podcast together with Luke the Pseudofin. So we're releasing an episode every week where I talk to big names in Bitcoin and small names in Bitcoin for 1 to 2 hours. And I do all that not because I want a million views. I do it because I want to keep these bonds with all these people and I want to nourish the relationships I've built in Bitcoin. Because at this point, like for me, you know, discovering Bitcoin like in my early 40s and having this big change in my life happen, it feels like a second chance to make something of myself. And I'm just going to grab it by the balls and see where it leads, because I'm going to regret it. Forever if I don't. So, and so far it has taken me to places I never thought I'd see and situations I never thought I'd be in. I mean, I'm still not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but I know a billionaire, a prince, and a president at this point. Like, so what? And all of that because I rambled about Bitcoin. So I'm just having a hell of a ride and having fun. So yeah, that's enough for me. And I don't really care about, you know, fortune and fame. I just want to do what I love doing and hang out with people that I trust and I believe to have sound ideas and have interesting conversations with them. That's what I love to do. So that's what I try to do most.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we're all better for it, too. Like, I love listening to and reading your work. I think it's super educational, but it is fun. Like, and I think that's, for me, like, one of the things Bitcoin has reintroduced into my life is, like, this proclivity for spontaneity and self-expression. I think under a fiat standard, like, you're so, like, there's kind of this specter hanging over you of, you know, potential deplatforming, but also just, like, this kind of overwhelming surveillance and kind of this chilling effect on people's willingness and proclivity to express themselves. And I think at the end of the day, it's like when people don't have to be thinking through, you know, every last consideration of their action and can just express themselves, I think that really leads to like much healthier social dynamics as well. And like, yeah, for me, like I was, you know, I didn't really relish the idea of being a public persona, but like as I came into Bitcoin, I was like, you know what, that sounds pretty fun. Like, let me give it a go and kind of be spontaneous with it and see where it takes me. And I think everyone could be well served to like incorporate more of that into their lives. And I mean, I think you're a great example of that. You know, you're having fun and you're talking a bit about Bitcoin and doing the things that animate you. And, you know, it's taken you quite a long ways. So I think, I mean, for me, that's quite inspiring for sure.
Well, thank you. I mean, it is a double-sided coin. I mean, I'm pretty okay with the attention I get now, but like having that 10x or 100x, so I'm all of a sudden like a famous person, I wouldn't want that to happen. I don't think so, because I mean, stuff can get pretty overwhelming pretty quick if you have a fast rise to fame. Fortunately, we're early in Bitcoin and Bitcoin is still pretty small, so yeah, I guess at some point I'll just stop traveling around the world and, you know, be with my family a little more and hide away somewhere. But and the thing with attention and having a reputation and all that is that you can't take it back. You're like, you can't reverse the process. So people should think twice before they throw their name out there. I attach my name to my stuff because I just read Skin in the Game by Nicholas Taleb, and that book inspired me to do that, because I knew that if I had something to lose, that is my reputation, my work would be better off for it. And I think that worked for me. I mean, I take more pride in my writing because I attached my name to it and I wanted to you know, be public about what I thought and all that. So, but it's definitely a double-sided coin. I encourage people who want to be anonymous to be anonymous. I mean, you can still have many of my best friends in Bitcoin are anonymous, like Fractal or Didi or whoever, and they can do the same thing from an anonymous account. So if you can keep that privacy, it's probably for the better. It's not for everyone to be known. Yeah, but each to his own, I guess, and it's a personal decision.
Yeah, no, and I mean, listening to you there, I think, like, I don't know if anyone necessarily or well-adjusted people relish the idea of being famous. I think that sounds like a large burden that might, you know, reduce your quality of. But as far as like your plans for the future, is there anything that you're working on or new ideas that you've encountered that are inspiring you? Anything, you know, your fans can expect from you going forward?
Well, right now I'm working on a Praxeology book, and when I'm done with that, we're turning that into a course on Emeralize app. Emeralize is a fascinating new Bitcoin project. It's a cross between Udemy and the Lightning Network, basically. So you can sell courses for sats, and you can do that because it's the Lightning Network, you can do that in any way you want. You can give sats back if people finish the course and so on and so forth. And you can give badges on public private key badges and awards to people. So looking forward to that project a lot. And then I'm doing quite a bit of traveling this year. So I'm going now to Germany this weekend, and then Bergen, Norway the weekend after that. Sydney in April, another place in Germany in April. Miami in May, hope to see you there. And Sydney, no, I said Sydney already, I think. Yeah, Prague in June. Yeah, is that in September, October? I can't remember. And then there's in India, Bitcoin for India in Bangalore. So I'm going to a lot of places and, you know, trying to connect with Bitcoiners, and I'm basically throwing things at the wall and see what sticks at this point, and trying to hop onto the things I find interesting and funny, fun to do. So who knows? I just released the rehash of my old two books, Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined, is now available as Bitcoin Sovereignty and Independence, with a hardcover and everything, and a foreword by Prince Philip of Serbia.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
So check that out if you want. It's pinned on my profile. So that's the current thing for me. And apart from that, working on the Praxeology book and trying to come up with talks for all these conferences. And yeah, we'll see where it leads.
Awesome. Well, if that's the current thing for you, I support the current thing. Is what I'll say. But I also, yeah, highly recommend everyone check out Knut's work, Independence Reimagined, Sovereignty Through Mathematics, and Bitcoin, everything divided by 21 million. Knut's also has just some amazing podcasts out there. It's been super inspirational for me, I'll say. And yeah, I really look forward to meeting you in Miami. I'll be there May 18th through 20th with the rest of the Bitcoin Magazine and Bitcoin conference teams. It's going to be a lot of fun. I highly recommend everyone save 10% on their tickets. Use code COSMIC at checkout. You can also get 10% off everything in the Bitcoin Magazine store there. So magazines, Bitcoin art, merch. It's going to be a lot of fun. A really high signal, low noise event. I think the people that are attending are going to be people building for the long term. So should be a blast. And yeah, Knut, Chris, anything else you guys want to leave our audience with, or we get to wrap it here?
I'm good on my end. Knut, anything else? We'll kick it over to you.
No, just a basic shill. Check out knutswanholm.com for my merch, and you find my books at consensus.network or bitcoinbook.shop. That's where you can pay them with Bitcoin, pay for them with Bitcoin. And yeah, check out the Freedom Footprint Show if you haven't yet. New episode every week. And yeah, we're having fun there. So hope to see you all at one of the conferences, and keep doing Satoshi's work. Yeah, take care, everyone. This was great fun. Thank you for letting me rant about this and that for so long.
Anytime. I love to hear it. Thanks so much for coming on, Knut. I look forward to meeting you in Miami. It's going to be a blast. Cheers, everyone.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLIVE to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts, Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com. As 2023 begins, the broke issue stares head-on into the looming realities of a broken economy, a more broke central bank, and considers how Bitcoiners can share their knowledge, their projects, and their mentalities to remain strong economic nodes throughout the winter. As a global Bitcoin news medium with a mission to accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization, Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Inside Bitcoin Magazine, you will find exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, and powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Each issue will be shipped safely in a secure box mailer to protect the integrity of each copy. Print magazines, not money. Buy Bitcoin Magazine.